We fell silent and walked up to the gates to the estate, getting our game faces on along the way. Ramirez's natural expression was a cocksure smile, but when things got hairy, he went with a cool, arrogant look that left his eyes focused on nothing and everything at the same time. I really don't care what my game face looks like. Mine is all internal. I kept Anna's face and her serious eyes in mind as I tromped up to the Gothic gate made of simulated wrought iron, but heavy enough to stop a charging SUV. I struck it 3 times with my staff and planted its end firmly onto the ground. The gate buzzed and began to open of its own accord. Halfway through, something near the hinges let out a whine and a puff of smoke, and it stopped moving. "That you?" I asked him. "I took out the lock, too," he replied quietly, "and the cameras that can see the gate, just in case." Ramirez doesn't have my raw power, but he uses what he has well. "Nice," I told him. "Didn't feel a thing." His grin flickered by. "De nada. I'm the best." I stepped through the gate, keeping a wary eye out. The night was all but complete, and the woods were lovely, dark, and deep. Tires whispered on pavement. A light appeared in the trees overhead and resolved into headlights. A full-fledged limousine, a white Rolls with silver accents, swept down the drive to the gate and purred to a halt 20 feet in front of us. Ramirez muttered under his breath. "You want I should down, big fella?" I said. "Save ourselves the walk." "Bah," he said. "Some of us are young and healthy." The driver door opened and a man got out. I recognized him as one of Lara's personal bodyguards. He was a bit taller than average, leanly muscled, had a military haircut and sharp, wary eyes. He wore a sports jacket, khakis, and wasn't working to hide the shoulder rig he wore under the coat. He took a look at us, then passed us at the gate and the fence. Then he took a small radio from his pocket and started speaking into it. "Dresden?" he asked me. "Yeah." "Ramirez?" "The one and only," Carlos told him. "You're armed," he said. "Heavily," I replied. He grimaced, nodded, and said, "Get in the car, please." "Why?" I asked him, oh so innocently. Ramirez gave me a sharp look, but said nothing. "I was told to collect you," the bodyguard said. "It isn't far to the house," I said. "We can walk." "Ms. Wraith asked me to assure you that on behalf of her father, you have her personal pledge of safe conduct as stipulated in the accords." "In that case," I said, "Ms. Wraith can come tell me that her personal self." "I'm sure she will be happy to," the bodyguard said. "At the house, sir." I folded my arms and said, "If she's too busy to move her pretty ass down here, why don't you go ask her if we can't come back tomorrow instead?" There was a whirring sound, and one of the back windows of the roll slid down. I couldn't see much of anyone inside, but I heard a velvet-soft woman's laugh saunter out of the night.
"You see, George, I told you."
The bodyguard grimaced and looked around.
"They've done something to the gate. It's open. You're exposed here, ma'am."
"If assassination was their intention," the woman replied, "believe me when I say that Dresden could already have done it, and I feel confident that his companion, Mr. Ramirez, could have managed the same."
Ramirez stiffened a little and muttered between clenched teeth,
"How does she know me?
Ain't many people ride zombie dinosaurs and make regional commander in the wardens before they turn 25, I replied. "Betcha she's got files on most of the wardens still alive."
"And some of the trainees," agreed the woman's voice. "George, if you please."
The bodyguard gave us a flat, measuring look and then opened the door of the car, one hand resting quite openly on the butt of the pistol hanging under one arm. The mistress of the White Court stepped forth from the Rolls Royce.
"Lara is difficult to describe." I'd met her several times, and each meeting had carried a similar impact, a moment of stunned admiration and desire at her raw physical appeal that did not lessen with exposure. There was no one feature about her that I could have pointed out as particularly gorgeous. There was no one facet of her beauty that could be declared as utter perfection. Her appeal was something far greater than the sum of her parts,
and none of those were less than heavenly. Like Thomas, she had dark, idly curling hair, so glossy that the highlights were very nearly a shade of blue. Her skin was one creamy, gently curving expanse of milk-white perfection, and if there were moles or birthmarks anywhere on her body, I couldn't see them. Her dark pink lips were a little large for her narrow-chinned face, but they didn't detract. They only gave her a look of lush overindulgence, of deliberate and wicked sensuality. It was her eyes, though, that were the real killers. They were large, oblique orbs of arsenic gray, highlighted with flecks of periwinkle blue. More important, they were very alive eyes, alert, aware of others, shining with intelligence and humor. So much so, in fact, that if you weren't careful, you'd miss the smoldering, demonic fires of sensuality in them, of a steady, predatory hunger. Beside me, Ramirez swallowed. I knew only because I could hear it. When Lara makes an entrance, no one looks away. She wore a white silk business suit, its skirt less than an inch too short to be considered dignified business wear, the heels of her white shoes just a tiny bit too high for propriety. It made it difficult not to stare at her legs. A lot of women with her coloring couldn't pull off a white outfit, but Lara made it look like a goddess's toga. She knew the effect she had when we looked at her, and her mouth curled into a satisfied little smile. She walked toward us slowly, one leg crossing the other at a deliberate pace, hips shifting slightly. The motion was awfully pretty. Sheer, sensual femininity gathered around her in a silent, unseen thundercloud, so thick that it could drown a man if he wasn't careful. After all, she had drowned her father in it, hadn't she?